Hey everybody, I'm Sean Hammond with PremierGuitar.com doing a rig rundown with Sonny Landreth in the Redstone Room in Davenport, Iowa today. Sonny, thanks so much for taking time out of your busy schedule to talk to us.
It's great to be here. Thanks for having us.
Yeah, well, it's our pleasure. So we wanted to take a look at your rig here. You've got some cools that people have read about in our recent feature, I'm sure. You've got your pedal board here and your, not your full rig, but it doesn't seem to make a difference from what we've heard so far. It sounds great. So where do you want to start?
Well, actually, yeah, it's a good point talking about a different rig for different venues and depending on the run. In this case, we're flying to all these shows. So what's really cool about this, I'll bring my what I call my survival gear, which I can make through pretty much anything. And probably start back here with the head. This is one of the ones I've had for a long, long time, James Demeter TGA3. And with the back line, we'll have provided a Fender Twin reissue, the 65 reissue, or a 4x12 cab with a DSL 2000. It's one of the two, a lot of times the Twin. And the reason I do that is that way I've got, you know, the core part of my sound with the amp, but should something happen to it, as in the airline less than special handling sometimes, then I've got a backup amp. And a Twin is great for a clean sound, and I can we bypass and use the speaker, the 2x12s that running at 4 ohms.
Yeah, your tech Jimmy was telling us that the quarter inch cable here is just sort of a dummy cable, right?
Pretty much, yeah.
You're not actually going through the preamp; you're going straight into the speakers.
Exactly, but it's there in case my amp does go down, then he's already set somewhat. And because the thing you want to do is keep it rolling. And there's nothing like dead space, dead air, and nothing to show for it, you know, in the way of having, you know, keeping the set running in between the songs. So if something does go awry, then we've got a bit of a backup plan.
Now, a lot of people, when they think about you and your amps, they're always foaming at the mouth over your dumbles. So some may be surprised to see that on a stripped-down rig like this, you've got the Demeter. So you want to tell us a little bit about that dynamic and what makes you choose the Demeter over your dumbles? Is it just pragmatics and not wanting that less than special handling to take care of one of your very expensive dumbles? Or
it's a little bit of all of the above. I mean, this head, Jim Demeter made that for me back in 1989, and I used it with John Hyatt and all that, those recordings and a ton of sessions and South of I-10 and many other albums I've made. So it's one of my go-to heads. And then the dumble, it's just a matter of, you know, if I want to go out and use it, then I'll look at our logistics and I'll feel better about having to fly, or if we have a bus, if we're doing a bus run or with a van. So it's a little bit of kind of putting that together and kind of sussing it out a bit. But this head is great. I use it in the yellow channel, the clean channel. And it's really pedal friendly.
Exclusively in that channel?
Yeah, I do, pretty much. I mean, I've recorded with the other ones a lot over the years, but like out on these shows, that's pretty much the thing.
And what are the power tubes in that one?
The 6L6s, the JJs, and 12AX7s in the front end. I still like the Chinese. I still have some of the original stock on those. I like that a lot.
Now, as you were warming up a little bit a few minutes ago, I mean, to me, it sounded just like on your albums. How much do you use the Demeter amp on your own recent albums, like Elemental Journey and stuff like that?
Yeah, actually, quite a bit. I used it for a lot of the tracks, and it's just sort of. I tend to grab whatever's nearest sometimes too. I've said that before.
I'm just imagining some gearheads out there scoffing or almost being like, no way, because you're, like I said, you're so well known for your dumbles, and you know, dumble amps have this whole mythology around them, and for good reason. So I imagine some are wondering, like, nothing against Demeters, I mean, I own a Demeter pedal and they're great, James is great, but I bet people are wondering, like, why is he choosing the Demeter when he's got those priceless dumbles by?
Well, for one thing, the priceless part, you know, you have to take that into consideration. But, you know, I've traveled a lot with it. And when we're, for example, playing in our area, the, say, the New Orleans Jazz and Heritage Festival, we do a whole run of dates every year that
really jump starts our year. And I'll have my whole rig. I'll have the Dumble and the 2x12 cab he made for me.
I should clarify. I think I was actually meant like when you were recording, like you said, you used the TGA3 Demeter on your new album a lot. I was wondering if some people are wondering, well, why would he use it so much when he's got the Dumble there in his safe studio at home?
Oh, yeah, it's all apples and oranges, you know. They're all different, and everything brings a sonic character to it. And that's what I wanted to do this time, was to have a broader canvas to sort of work with, and it come up with a lot of different colors. So I use the TGA3, I use my Dumble, I use matchless, actually HD30, and a couple of my Fender amps, because you want to have a lot of different sounds, and especially with an instrumental album, I think was really important, and also to marry those specific tonalities with the strings, because that was a big thing for me this time, to change the sound a whole lot. Mm-hmm. And to do that, and to find a place in the mix, some certain amps work in certain respect, you know, and feel and touch, and for the song, whatever serves the song. I mean, that's really what it's all about to me.
Okay. Now, speaking of strings, you're talking about strings, orchestra strings on your new album, but we did have a bunch of people on Facebook when we posted letting people know that we were coming to do this rig rundown. They were asking about your strings. So how about we talk about the guitar you're holding here, and then maybe you could also talk about the strings you prefer and how you like to have your guitar set up. I mean, obviously it's unique compared to what most electric guitarists are used to talking about, because you play slide so much.
Right. And this one is it's a Fender Strat, obviously. It's from the late 80s, a 57 reissue. And I really like it. It's a good feel. It's a soft V-neck. And I like the overall feel. Just works great for sliding and fretting behind the slide. These are Lindy Fralin's Hot Vintage pickups on all three positions. And the only other thing, we did a still shot of it earlier, but it's the Sur Silent Single Coil Backplate System. And you'll notice it's a much bigger backplate. And there's a pickup he has embedded on the other side of this, and by hooking up, and the wiring scheme is such, it really knocks down the hum a great deal. I mean, they say it up to 85%, and I've really noticed the difference.
And you don't notice much of a tonal difference?
None at all. It doesn't affect the tone at all. It's not even in. It's not even wired to affect it in any way. He's got a little secret there. I think he. I appreciate it, because that way, I even put it on my 66 Strat that I used a lot and did a lot on the recordings. So yeah, it doesn't affect it, and it's a great way to get some of that god-awful hum out. And really, even that's not so bad, but at times when we get down to using a compressor on a clean tone and then you kick in an overdrive, You got a lot of beasts there behind all that.
And you've got another trick to cut down on that noise that we'll talk about when we talk about your pedal board. But can you talk a little bit more about the guitar? You said it's a 57 reissue,
right,
that you got from like 80...
I think it's 86 or 87. And my Road Strats were just off the wall when I bought in back in 88. And I changed the body out with a different neck from an 87 and an 88. So they're kind of road dogs, but they sound great and they play great.
And this one has Lindy Fralin Hot Vintages?
Exactly. And the other thing, these are D'Addario gauge 13 through 56. That's J22s, I believe it is. And so that's great for slide, because you're going to get some relief with that tension anyway. It's going to pull on the neck to give you some height. But the idea is you want to be able to have enough height that when you're sliding, that those notes float, and then you can still reach back and fret, and that's going to intonate. So it's really important that your intonation is there, and also to combine that with the weight of the slide that you're using. So these Dunlops work really well. I put in for the 215s. And that way, you've got a balance set, and gives you more flexibility too, because you want to be able to come back to. I'm tuned to E on this guitar. It's a Vastabold tuning, so that's low to high E, B, E, G sharp, B, E. Yeah, that's just.
And on a gig like this, you've got just two guitars with you. You have another 80s, I think, Strat over there, right? And between songs, you just have Jimmy, your tech, retune them, right?
Yeah, it's the Houdini magic trick, you know, sleight of hand. But that's really the thing, because that way, while I'm playing this one in E, for example, he can be tuning the other Strat to A. So we'll swap. And I like to hold to a couple of songs at least at a time. Sometimes like a mini set within the set, I'll do like four songs in A, and maybe one of them like an A minor. So I'll change that on stage. And then I'll go back to the E guitar for this one. And then while I'm playing this one again, he drops down to G. So that's a good way to be able to pull off the songs and all the chordal tunings with only two guitars. I use about five or six or so different tunings in the set each night. So it's important to be able to have that in the lineup and to be able to make those changes in between the songs.
Have you and or Jimmy gotten it down to a science where you have like a preferred string height and nut height? And like, you know, some guys are really meticulous and know the exact, you know, micro inch that they've got to get it to be happy.
Well, yeah, I used to be like that. And it is important until you find what you like and how that feels to you. Because let's face it, if you're not feeling good, you're not inspired, you're not going to play as well. It doesn't matter what toys you have. You know, that's why certain, you know, pieces of gear, it inspires you. And for me, to be able to figure out, well, how do I make the common denominator with the way we recorded a song in the studio and then how we're going to play it live. For me, it's really two different things up to a point. But what I've learned is the songs that are going to make their way into the set kind of have a life of their own and will evolve. And a good example would be, say, Native Stepson. I've been playing that for a long, long time. And when I look back to how that song started and where it is today, it's pretty interesting. So when you think about it like that, then it's what is going to enable you to do that in the way of the gear that you have and kind of putting those pieces of the puzzle together.
Cool. Let's talk about the slides a little bit more. You mentioned that you use the Jim Dunlop. And considering that you're, you know, one of the most amazing slide players on the planet, there are a lot of other slides out there, little boutique companies making all sorts of odd shapes and using different materials, but you just use the standard straight-ahead Pyrex slide. Why is that?
Yeah, and I've got a ton of slides at home, and I love Terry Lambert's slides. They're all great, and I use those too. But I've got some that Glassblower made many years ago that's really dense, real dense glass, really smooth and heavy. And I actually prefer those, but I do have tendonitis. That hit me back in the late 80s, so I have to be real careful. I stretch before I play every night. It's a whole regime I do to warm up. And so I would actually use a little heavier weight than this, but this way I don't... I'm not encumbered. I don't run into problems physically.
And when you're on the road playing night after night, that weight does start to make a difference.
Yeah, there's a cumulative effect of all that and diminishing returns. And you don't want to get to that point, you know. And in recording, too, a lot of times I'll do that. I'll mix it up. If I'm using a resonator guitar and some acoustic things, then I'll use different slides. I love bottlenecks. They're great because of the flare at the top gives you a better vibrato. I mean, you get a faster, more powerful vibrato. But because they're not linear like these, it makes the all six strings at the same time stuff, you know, and intonate. It's just really is a lot easier for me. And at one point, it's more like the path of least resistance, you know.
So this is the only slide you bring on the road with you?
Yeah, this is it.
Cool. Should we jump over to the pedals?
Sure.
What did you call this pedal board?
The runway. I feel like I'm on the runway here about to take off, hopefully. But it's great. Jimmy came up with this idea. It's brilliant. It folds up. You can put it in a suitcase at the end of the night. And when you're dealing with TSA and you know, the weight and the number of pieces with the airlines, it's really a challenge. So this way I can change out, swap out different pedals. Some of these are always there and some come and go. And just different colors, different sounds. Keep it interesting. Starts out with the tuner here for the Boss. But I should tell you, I think he mentioned earlier, it's actually last in the chain, so that when in between songs, when I mute it and we can swap off guitars, you don't hear the hurricane. If the compressor's on with the fuzz tone or whatever, get pretty noisy up there, especially on bigger stages and outside for the festival kind of gigs.
And that's a very novel way, smart way to deal with the noise instead of having to throw a noise gate in there or whatever, which just adds a whole new dimension of tone suckage.
Yeah, I know, exactly. That's what we try to do, is avoid tone suckage. But yeah, it's a great way to do it. And so even though I'm used to having it first, and it's easier for me to operate it, to pop it on and off in between the songs and to tune up. So that's that one. Then we go to usually put the fuzz, any fuzz device I'm using first. And the reason I do that is with the old pedals, of course, they don't like to see anything else. They want to see the pickup. And if you start adding anything in front of it, you'll hear the difference in tone is god-awful. And that's an old story. Everybody knows about that. So that's where having loop switching, you know, being able to have a pedal board where you're switchable. I also have all the guys over at Voodoo Labs put together a really nice pedal board for me that then when we can, I'll take care of all my gear. I'll have it, and everything's set, and hit one switch, and you're off and running. That's really cool. But here we are today, or tonight, and in the real world of live giggery, where we can't take all our goodies, this is a great way to do it. So after the fuzz, then I have, I really love Alfred Mehta's pedals, in particular the Zen Drive. And this one in particular, it's a higher gain mod he did for me. And I can, if I had to pick one pedal, that would be it to get through any...
The Zen Drive.
Just about anything, yeah.
But this one's not stock, you're saying?
Yeah, he's modded it. It's a higher gain version, just a bit more. But what I like about it, it's really articulate and really smooth, and I love the way the mid-range is voiced. And both of these pedals, this one here, the Masferatu, is a MOSFET design. It's just got... more gain and probably more harmonics and just a different vibe. It's a, kind of two different colors coming from the same camp. And another pedal I use a lot is Mike Fuller's Plimso. I love that. It's great because you can move in between the two different cascade, the two different circuits he has in that. It just, it's not here tonight, but again, on any given night, that would be here. Then moving from the drive pedals, then I go into the compressor. This is the Keeley, which I love. I played the Dynacomps for years and years when they first came out, for a long time, and they're great for slide, for sustain, and for achieving unity gain, because that's the most elusive of it all for me. Because what I like to do, instead of having the clean rhythm as one setting on the amp, I like to just roll the volume back on the guitar, on the pot, like a lot of people do. But then I want to have a big clean sound that's the same level as my individual lead sound. So that's a different thing. That opens up a whole different can of worms, so to speak. So this is a good way to do it. The compressor, you can achieve unity gain over your other drive pedals, and then switch in and out from a clean or more overdriven or like a crunch tone in between.
So what made you switch from the Dynacomp to the Keeley?
I think it's more clarity. It's a little more high def, so to speak. And it tends to hold up and keep I notice more nuance with the pedals. You know, it just has more for that. And I like that, especially with harmonics. It's really great for bringing those out. And with these chordal tunings that I use, it's a really good, it's a good tool, and it really helps to pull that up over the mix.
Okay, and then next up you've got a TC Electronic Chorus Plus.
Yeah, and I like it a lot. It adds a lot of depth, and it's a rich sound. And some of the things I do can get pretty, I notice with the overtones, I like to embody that and use that a lot. And it doesn't get in the way. It's more clarity of the sound. At the same time, it thickens it up. And in different points of the song, you might want to bring one section out as you would a movement in a piece. You know, so to have something to identify that or have it jump out more, and I'll tend to do that within the song, maybe just certain parts of the song. I'll hit the chorus and then go back to one of the other drive sounds.
And then last but not least?
Yeah, the T-Rex replica. This is really my favorite digital type of pedal. It really doesn't sound digital at all. And I've got a lot of these pedals, and this one has stayed on there. And what I really like about it, it's got a much thicker tone, more like tape. And and it doesn't get wiggy on you. Some of them don't have on the repeats. You might want that darker, and that's cool. But for what I like more clarity there as well. And it's really stood the test of time on the road, too.
Do you use that primarily for longer delays or just a little bit more ambiance? Or?
On my big pedal board with the Voodoo Labs, I have two of them. And I set one for a shorter delay and one for a longer. So when I'm out doing shows like this, then I just split the difference, basically. You know, so something that works.
Just leave it set all night.
Yeah, I just leave it set. Every now and then I, you know, get a little crazy and I get down there and flip it around a bit. But generally speaking, I just hold what I have there.
Now, before we hear you demonstrate a few of your favorite combinations on here, you mentioned earlier that there are some pedals that kind of come and go. I mean, you bring them with you probably, but some of them stay on there every night. Which ones are those?
That would be the Zen Drive, the Keeley. And if I'm using delayed, it'll be the T-Rex. But for sure, if I have, I've had amps go down. You know, we were in London a few years back, and the rig went down. My rig went down, the backline rig went down. So then I plugged into the PA. So I had my go-to pedals, like I said before, and pulled it off, and actually sounded pretty good.
Wow.
And so we flipped the monitor around for me and one for the crowd, and then and did that across the front, you know, on the front of the stage. And, you know, it wasn't ideal, but then I was really impressed with how well it actually worked. And the compressor really helps a lot with that, too, because it smooths it out from top to bottom. So none of the frequencies were poking out. Like, there's a setup for vocal mics. And with some, the engineer coming up with some quick moves there at the last minute, we pulled it off.
Cool. Now, I should also mention you have a pedal board power supply that I've heard of and probably a lot of people have seen. It's fairly new in the last year or so, the Sanyo Pedal Juice, but I haven't seen it on any, any of these rig rundowns we've done so far. And you want to talk about that a little bit?
Yeah, well, I love it because for years we've been, you know, going through batteries, and I just don't like that idea at all, throwing that away. And, you know, you talk about the footprint and all, you start to think about all these things and the environment. And not to mention, I mean, cost. I mean, if I look back at all the money we spent on batteries, and the rechargeable ones work, but I could really hear a difference a bit, you know, in the tone. I mean, I think that's a good way to go. But this eliminates all of that, and I have no problems with it. Jimmy, my tech has run several pedals just all day to see how long it would last, how it would hold up, crank through it. And it's really doing the trick for me. And I like it's really simple. It's really neat. If you can put this on a regular pedal board and have it set up, you would save a lot of space on that too. So,
do you prefer it like for tonal reasons too, or just like because it is a battery? And like you were saying, Jimmy...
Right.
Was telling us earlier that he has hooked up like every pedal he could find, and it ran them all regardless of the milliamp rating and stuff, and that you guys have never even come close to draining the battery. But do you choose it just because it's convenient and you don't have to plug it in, or do you actually like how it sounds better than some of the other power supplies on the market?
Well, I haven't noticed any problems with it sonically, you know. That's the first thing. You'll know if you're in the heat of battle in a gig, you're going to know that. Anything that doesn't work, it comes to the surface and rears its ugly head. You know, doing a shootout with all the above, honestly haven't done that. But I'm perfectly fine with it. We haven't had any problems with it.
And you don't have to worry about any ground loops or hum or anything,
yeah,
from AC.
Haven't had any problems like that with it.
Cool. Well, should we hear some of your favorite combinations on the pedals?
So give me an idea, it's straight through the amp. If we're in E tuning. So the first one here, actually I would go to, would be the Zendro. And you'll notice what's great about it, it has a great vocal sound, I think. And again, the way Alf has the mid-range voice works really well with this gauge, because the 13 through 56 gauge really makes a difference. And how that gets, how you can project and get that from top to bottom. Because I think in terms more like that, where I've got all six strings going. So. It's a nice thick sound, that's what I like, and especially with single coil pickups. The never ending, you know, saga. Because I love humbucking pickups, I love Gibsons too. I mean, I've got a bunch of them, I grew up playing them. But I love the feel and the harmonic overtones, and for slide, I really, this is what I like.
Do you feel like it lets more of the dynamics from your fingers, all the little subtle things you do with both hands? That they translate better through single coils?
I do. And partly because sometimes with humbuckers, it gets a bit muddy with all six strings. So it's a give and a take, you know. You have the real fat tone for individual notes. But since I tend to use a lot more on all six strings and getting a bigger sound, I think it makes for a more complex sound overall. So that's where the single coils really shine, I think.
Okay. So that's the Zen Drive by itself.
And then the Masferrato just is kind of a higher gain. It's a little more aggressive, and sometimes here, too, I'll combine one. I'll keep this, say, a little bit cleaner up than this. And if I want to combine with the pedal here, we go to So it gets enough definition that way, and this is where I kicked in the Keeley compressor. So that would be an example of that, using not as much driven overall, and I might set this up and go without the compressor and just use this with a little more gain on it. So it doesn't have as much of a compressed sound. Just my richer tone. It still stays pretty even.
Are there certain circumstances during which you usually use the pedal, just the Masferrato like that, for a thicker, more overdriven sound?
Yeah, right. I'll do in the middle of a blues tune, or pedal to metals, encore tune we do a lot of times. So I'll start out with a Zen drive, which is a little, you know, more open-ended, and then switch during a solo. Again, you know, to sort of mark different sections of the song, and I like to build that up towards the end. Sometimes I look down for the last song. Well, hell, turn them all on. It's time to go home, folks. We'll give you all we got. So we'll do that too.
Okay. So what are some of your other favorite combinations?
This is one Jimmy Demeter's Fuzzy Later. And what's cool about this pedal, it doesn't really do some of the squawky things we love about the fuzz face, and I'll go in and out of those two, but this one is really a lot quieter, and it's still really musical, and it fattens up the single coil and gets some of that vibe.
When you say quieter, do you mean lower gain or less just extraneous noise in the signal?
More of the noise, yeah. And because when you start cranking it up, that's when you kind of run into problems sometimes. And what I like to do also is get feedback going and use that like a horn section and then play on top of it. So it helps to have so that the pedals you use aren't fighting one another. I mean, you can generate some chaos that's really cool too, and it gets a bit hard to control at times, but it's good to be able to have one to go to that you know you'll hit that particular frequency and you can work with it more. So it adds some hair of the beast, but still can get definition like that too. And I like the way it comes up more low end. It just sort of swells, and you can play on top of that.
Sounds great, man. So are there other combinations that are like go-to combinations for different songs or just different moods?
Yeah, what I would do for something like that too, say I start out something like Native Steps on an E. And I might start it out on the Zen drive. We'll add the T-Rex pedal. So that starts adding a little percussiveness to it. You can hear the difference. That's without it.
A lot more articulation.
So that's the main part of the song, and then later on, they go into the solo. I might kick this one in. That into the beast, it comes up. And then at one point, you know, you might want to do some kick in the chorus. So that's a more of a swell for that part of the song. And at that point, I might switch over and just go to the fuzzy later in this case, and it gives it a different character for the outro. And then at that point, I just kick it all on.
All right, cool. So are those all your main favorite sounds?
That's some of them, yeah.
Cool.
And the other thing, too, a lot of it, these are just the effects, but it's how you use your hands and move it on the fretboard. So it really makes a huge difference. And changing the pickup, so if I'm... And every point in between, you change the colors, and it gives you a much more vocal quality to your sound.
You do such intricate slide work. You know, a lot of people can play a good slide guitar, but you do a lot of intricate stuff behind the slide. And one of our Facebook fans was asking, like, how did you develop a technique that would avoid getting unwanted buzz from adjacent strings that you're not playing? And I imagine it's a lot of muting with your other hands, other fingers, right, that aren't wearing the slide.
Guard back here. You know, whatever string you're not playing, you guard with your finger. And it's muting on this side as well. Yeah.
we've got your other Rode guitar here. This is another 80s Strat?
Right, and what I've done is I'll use this for the Spanish tunings, which is like A and G. So we tune to A, low to high, E, A, E, A, C sharp, E. It's got more of that high sound like Lil George used.
Now, is this one set up the same way with as far as string height and stuff?
Yes, basically all the same. I like that for consistency.
Now, people are going to see the different fretboard. You got a rosewood one on this and the different, it's not a vintage style bridge. Does that affect any of it for you?
Yeah, it does. There's a big difference with the rosewood and the maple primarily. And I'll tweak that to the songs, like a darker sound for some things or a brighter tone. Like I played some of Native Stepson earlier. That works great on the maple neck. Whereas the rosewood works really good on the song Forgotten Story that's on the new album. Is that what you
know what I'm hearing? And does this one also have the Sir?
Hey. These are the Lindy Fralin, same pickups, the Hot Vantage, and the Sir system, the silent single coil system.
All right, cool. Now, I forgot to ask earlier, but I want to ask about cables, and you made an interesting comment earlier. Because a lot of us players are pretty picky about having cables have low capacitance so that, you know, you get as much of your signal fidelity through as possible. And you made some interesting comments. You want to tell us your philosophy about the cables?
Well, basically, whatever works, it stays through the gig. But, yeah, you want it to have clarity and not creating more. If you get impedances off, you get more noise on top of noise. But at one point, there's a lot of other factors, like if there's a lot of neon lighting in a smaller club, for example, that pretty much goes out the window, you know. So it's ones that hold up on the road, too. It's nothing worse than having a cable go out right in the middle of a solo or playing a song. That can kill the mojo pretty fast. So it's something to hold up on the road. And the Planet Waves have done great by me, and George L's great, you know. I mean, there's a lot of them out there now, more of these better, higher-end cables. And I've noticed a difference if you start piling up a lot of different pedals and you start running into problems. So it's a bit of a balancing act with that, too.
Now, how about picks? We've covered just about everything except picks. What are your favorites?
Well, these are actually, I used the Jim Dunlop for years. It's the flat thumb pick. But these are made in Japan, a version of his pick, I'm sure. But they work better for me because they're smaller and they're thicker. But what's really cool about them, it's shaped like a flat pick, see, but it's got the curl, so you can go back and forth, the finger pick. And then you can bear down and use it like a thumb pick. So you can go in and out of the two, so it's really cool for that. A lot more versatile that way for me.
And what are they made of?
These are all plastic, you know. Nothing real exotic.
Celluloid.
Yeah, whatever it is. Now, it needs to be pretty thick for me for the heavier gauge strings.
Now, you're headed to Japan to get more. I think you said in your feature with us that you're going to go get more in Japan pretty soon. Have you gone yet?
No, I'm stocked up again, so I'm back in business.
So, Sonny, thanks so much for showing us all the intricate details of your rig, all the cool pedal combinations. It sounds amazing. And thank you again.
Appreciate it, Sean. Thanks for taking the time. Hope we shed some enlightenment. If not, come back to the gig. We'll try it all over again.
It was very cool. I'm Sean Hammond. Thanks for watching PremierGuitar.com.